Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, everybody. First off, I've been saying for a couple years now that now is not the time for the Joint Chiefs to take the nuclear codes away from Trump. Now is the time to give him the wrong codes. And you know what? I kind of have to assume that they've already done that by now. My guest today is Rick Wilson, like all the other founders of the Lincoln Project who we've had on this podcast. He is a former Republican political operative. But unlike Steve Schmidt and Stuart Stevens, Rick at least admits that he is deeply, deeply ashamed of everything he's ever done, not just on behalf of the Republican Party, but throughout the entirety of his life. No, that's not true. Rick and I have a terrific conversation. I know you'll enjoy it for a change. Now, one thing you should know is that we had this conversation on Monday, and this has been kind of a busy week. So this was 2 days after Trump's crazy hour-long phone call with the Georgia Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger. I remember there was a question whether that one was impeachable. You know, just find me 11,780 votes, just one more than I lost by. Don't you think that might have been a little suspicious? Yes, we did a complete recount, and it turns out that the president won by one vote. Mr. Secretary, who did the recount? Well, you know, it wasn't so much a recount. It was more that we found 11,780 votes, and the president won those 11,780 to zero in the batch of new votes that we found under a table in a box, and it was 11,780 for President Trump and zero for former Vice President Joe Biden. So there was very good reason at that point to conclude that maybe Trump was off his rocker. So Rick and I did the interview on Monday, the day before the Georgia elections, and you'll hear our predictions. I wanted us on record, and you will hear those predictions that comes up right toward the top of the interview. But of course, Democrats won both seats, which means that we will have the majority in the Senate, which, by the way, I can't emphasize enough how big that is. The majority controls the Senate. It means President Biden will be able to get his people confirmed, his nominees for the different appointments within the administration, the judges, and he'll be able to pass legislation for his agenda, and Democrats will control the floor. This is enormous. And I want to thank so many of you, so many of my listeners who responded and gave money to the ground game in Georgia. A few weeks ago, I was joined by Dee Taylor, the leader of Unite Here's then 600 canvassers who were knocking on doors for Warnock and Ossoff. Thanks in part to all of you and people like you. That number grew to 1,000 canvassers who knocked on more than 1.1 million doors. So thank you, listeners. So that happened Tuesday. That was Tuesday of this week. Then came Wednesday. On Wednesday morning, there were 140 or so Republican House members and 13 senators poised to challenge the certification of Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 election. Now, let's make one thing clear. There was absolutely no basis for that challenge to the election, to our democracy. This was a challenge to the entire basis of this country. This deeply cynical attack on our country was led in the Senate by Josh Hawley of Missouri and Ted Cruz. College graduates of Stanford and Princeton, respectively, and Yale and Harvard Law Schools. And a number of pundits have pointed to their education pedigrees and said, well, they're smart enough to know this is wrong. Believe me, everyone in the Senate knew this was wrong. Every one of those 13, every Republican in the Senate knew this was wrong. Everyone in the Senate knew this was wrong. Because it was all based on lies. Now, just examine, if you will, the statement that Cruz and Hawley and the rest that they issued in advance of the Electoral College certification process. I'm going to go through this. Okay, it began, this is a quote. The 2020 election featured unprecedented allegations of voter fraud, violations and lax enforcement of election law, and other voting irregularities. The 2020 election featured unprecedented allegations. Where did those allegations come from? Well, from Donald Trump. His harangue of Raffensperger featured just a catalog of baseless allegations, just absurd allegations that came from liars like Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell and right-wing hucksters who just make a lot of money putting out this crap to unsuspecting, sick, and stupid losers like the idiots who sacked the Capitol. These guys themselves, these senators, made an unprecedented number of bogus allegations of voter fraud violations, lax enforcement of election law, and other voting irregularities. Okay, now it picks up their statement. By any measure, the allegations of fraud and irregularities in the 2020 election exceed any in our lifetimes. Gee, could that have had anything to do with the guy who lost and you, his political lackeys, and the existence of social media and the dark web? Gee, why would these allegations exceed any in our lifetime? I know we didn't hear this many when we got our news from Walter Cronkite, you know, when I was a kid. Now we're getting it from Sean Hannity and Laura Ingraham and Tucker Carlson at Fox and from Breitbart and Newsmax and OANN and, of course, Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. Those platforms have created algorithms that amplify hate speech, disinformation, and conspiracy theories. And these ghouls, Hawley and Cruz and the rest of them, feed off of this garbage and amplify it. And their plan is to ride this excrement to power. These guys, Hawley, Cruz, they are sick. They want to be president. They are sick. This document continues. And those allegations are not believed by just one individual candidate. Instead, they are widespread. Reuters, Ipsos, polling, tragically, it says, I'm just emphasizing that. Reuters, Ipsos, polling, tragically, shows that 39% of Americans believe the election was rigged. That belief is held by Republicans, 67%, Democrats, 17%, and Independents, 31%. Well, I guess if you make an unprecedented number of bogus allegations and repeat them over and over yourselves and have known lowlifes, spread them through an unprecedented number of sleazy platforms, yeah, then that will tragically happen. Or not so tragically, huh, guys? Because, you know, we can exploit it and get the votes and the 67% of Republicans, you know, we can get them behind us. And not just their numbers, their anger, their sense of betrayal. We can rouse this rabble. We, Princeton and Stanford and Harvard and Yale graduates, we can ride this rabble to power. Wow. That's what these guys are all about. That's why I hate Ted Cruz. I just do. Okay, they continue in this document. Whether or not our elected officials or journalists believe it, that deep distrust of our democratic processes will not magically disappear. It should concern us all and it poses an ongoing threat to the legitimacy of any subsequent administrations. Oh, yes, yes, yes. It poses an ongoing threat to the legitimacy of any subsequent administrations. For example, the Biden administration, which you guys hope to run against in 4 years. Okay, let's wrap up this little manifesto. Ideally, the courts would have heard evidence. Ideally, the courts would have heard evidence and resolved these claims of serious election fraud. You know, they did. I texted Mark Elias last night, asked him how many victories there were in court. It's now 62 victories in court. Mr. Hawley, Mr. Cruz, you guys won once. In Pennsylvania, you got the 9 days allowed to cure ballots. The curing of ballots, someone to prove that their rejected ballot is valid. The Republicans, this is their big victory. They got the 9 days reduced to 6. That was their victory. These two and the others with them and the 140 in the House, they did this. They did this. And not just them alone. Mitch McConnell did this. Waiting a month to acknowledge the winner in this campaign, in this election? Unprecedented. You congratulate the winner when they're declared the winner, when we know they won. Joe Biden won with over 300 electoral votes. You guys knew it. So this is not just on these goons. It's on Mitch McConnell. It's on all the Republicans who didn't acknowledge that Biden had won. And that's what happened this week. Okay. Please enjoy the interview with Rick Wilson. It's a great one, you know, for a change. The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life conversation in German. For example, let's say you wanted to order soup with your dinner. Die Suppe würde mir auch gefallen. That means the soup. That means I would also like the soup. And that way, I get soup with dinner. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/franken. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/franken, spelled B-A-B-B-E-L, audibletrial.com/franken. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
I want to ask you about how the Lincoln Project worked in terms of who made those ads. Because we had Stuart Stevens on. I interviewed him before the election. And he had just come. Was he in Utah or someplace?
Yeah, we were all out in Utah. We had a COVID pod. We managed this thing for the first 6 months on Zoom. And it was just getting to the point where it was impossible. I was spending 9 or 10 hours a day on Zooms.
Yeah. Well, a lot of Americans have been doing that.
Yeah, completely. But we ended up setting up a COVID pod out in Park City where both Reed Galen and Steve Schmidt live. So we had our team of about 30 people out there. Stuart came on as a senior advisor. And, you know, he's arguably the greatest media consultant of the last, you know, 50 years.
Well, you're a media consultant too, so that involves some fake humility. Is that what that is?
Yeah, well, look, all false modesty is the worst kind. Stuart's got some mileage on me, and I love Stuart and value him every single minute of the day. He is a guy with enormous wisdom and experience.
And a great ad maker, and he went to film school.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah, so we had a great team, a great creative team. I had 7 production teams, all of whom got used to getting calls from me in the middle of the night, their time, saying, I have a really good idea. I'm sending you a script. Can I have this in the morning? So
I had one idea that I sent to Steve Schmidt, also mm-hmm. a Lincoln Project founder, was on this podcast. And you remember this? It was in the first debate, I think it was the first debate, Biden brings up the injecting the disinfectant. And then Trump goes, I was being sarcastic, and you know that. And if you look at that footage, boy, is he not being sarcastic.
So not sarcastic.
So I wanted you guys to do that one, which is show him saying I was being sarcastic and then show him. Ending on, what's her face, Dr. Brooks.
Dr. Brooks looking like she wanted to, all I could hear in her head, her internal monologue was, come sweet death, deliver me from this world.
Yeah, and you wrote a book with kind of that title, Everything Trump Touches Turns to Shit. Was that it?
Close enough. Everything Trump Touches Dies.
You know, yes.
I always joke about that. Is that, you know, the first time I said it, it was flippant. It was sort of like a throwaway ha-ha-ha line. And it, unfortunately for some people, has become like an iron law of American politics.
What does that mean?
Every single one of these people who believes they're the exception, in the end gets screwed.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because I was going to the literal dies, which is now up to 350,000, unfortunately. I mean,
that, unfortunately, is a scale problem that I did not intend it to apply to the country at large and non-combatants in this political war.
When did you write it? When did you start writing? When did you drop it?
I wrote Everything Trump Touches Dies in 2017.
Okay, so you didn't. Okay. I just wanted to cover you there.
And then my second book, Running Against the Devil, I wrote it in 2019. And when the paperback came out.
I didn't ask you this stuff. I just wanted to know when you used that dies thing to clear you.
Appreciate
That's
it.
All. I'm not really that interested in your second book or the first one, frankly. But anyway, so, but it's called Everything Trump Touches Dies. Okay. There you go. Number one New York Times bestseller. So you know what I wanted to talk to you about, which is, okay, so I've had Steve Schmidt, Stuart Stevens, now you. So this is three Lincoln Project guys. I guess you and Steve are founders, but Stuart made a lot of the ads. And I wanted to ask you about being a Republican.
Which I'm not anymore.
But you're not anymore. Yes. You're an independent now, right?
I am.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And Steve now has become a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And Stuart, I don't know, but Stuart wrote a book called It Was All a Lie.
Yep.
Basically saying that pretty much everything Republicans have been saying for quite a while is bullshit.
Yeah. And he's not wrong. And the weirdest part of this journey is, you know, eventually you have to reconcile the fact in your head as a consultant. You know, we're supposed to be the jaded, bitter, cynical guys. We're like, wait a minute, we've done that free market shit. What happened? You know. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I want to ask you about that because, you know, look, I have plenty of reason to have bad feelings about some members of the Democratic Party. I do, but I'm a Democrat, and I worked this cycle. Oh, by the way, we're doing this at the oddest. This interview at the oddest. Friggin' time. It's not, I don't know exactly when I'm going to drop it, but we're doing it. People should know January 4th.
What could go wrong?
Which is the day before Georgia and then 2 days before the Congress meets on the Electoral College. So this is the dumbest day ever to do this interview. But you know what I'd like to do on Georgia? I'm going to record us, and each of us, I would like to make a prediction, but do every prediction, and I'll just put the one where you're right.
Okay.
Because I think Ossoff's going to win, but not Warnock. Wait a minute, hang on. I think Warnock's going to win, but not Ossoff. I think both Republicans are going to win. I think both Democrats are going to win and control the Senate. Okay, now I've done it. Go ahead. It's your turn.
Look, I think it's looking a lot like both Democrats are going to win. I think it looks like both Republicans are going to win. I think it looks like Ossoff may pull it off, but Warnock doesn't. And maybe Warnock pulls it off and Ossoff doesn't. Wow. We are cynical and dark.
No, we aren't. That was just, that was humor.
Yes.
We'll know when this airs, we'll know what happened. So, but it's obviously looking a lot better than when this thing started. In terms of when the runoff started, partly because of Trump touched them and the two Republicans, you see, I'm tying it to your book, you see.
I also think the thing that may change the ballgame here at the last in Georgia is this. That tape that was released of Trump rambling for an hour like a crazy person.
Yes.
Blasting the Republican Secretary of State and the Republican leadership in the governor's office and the Republicans. I think that's the biggest X factor of all that we can't model in this race is that the Republicans have finally come to realize Donald Trump is not putting his hand on the Bible on January 20th and being sworn in for a second term. And the question is, are they depressed about it in Georgia or are they angry about it? If they're depressed about it, if like the bitter realization finally hits them, then maybe they don't come out and vote on election day. If they're not, and it's anger and it's, you know, rage, maybe they do. It has been so hard to model it and so hard to pull it. No one's really got a great sense of what's happening because the race has been tied in every survey, public and private. The race is a 1 or 2 point race in either direction, you know, as inside the margin of error. And it's incredibly frustrating. The real X factor, as in all these things, is Donald Trump. I mean, how does his, you know, craziness over the weekend play into a final decision by a Republican voter who says, yeah, you know, I'm not going to get out of bed tomorrow?
You know, it's funny. I have former Republican colleagues that I'm friends with, right? Mm-hmm. Friendly with. And so one of them is one of the 12 who signed on to this thing. And I texted him like, what are you doing? and this was before the tape came out.
Right.
And he tried to give me some bullshit, really was bullshit, which has been my experience now on this kind of thing, on the impeachment and all the stuff. But then I maintain friendship by saying something nice, like, what's your address for my Christmas card? You know? And then on the Christmas
asshole,
card.
Asshole, what's your address?
Well, no, then I just write, like, you know, may God grant you the wisdom to own your mistakes. And Happy New Year. And, you know, so, I mean, that tape, I can't imagine any Republican listening to that tape and going like, oh, my God, this is pathetic. This is pathetic. Oh, just give me one vote extra,
right.
Please.
Right. I mean,
that's all you got to find is one.
I spoke to a member yesterday, and the idea that people are going to lay down in front of the train after that is astounding, because that was not a guy who was acting in good faith. That was not a guy who was acting in any kind of rational manner. This was grasping. I mean, that for an hour, he just rambled. He had just the verbal diarrhea.
It was pathetic. Mm-hmm. It was a pathetic mm-hmm. human being. He's just gotten, it's gotten worse and worse and worse and worse when you couldn't believe it could get worse. And Americans are paying the price for that in their lives, obviously. Here's what I want to do is I would like to talk to you about being a Republican. It's something I started a few minutes ago, a couple minutes ago, which is, you know, I've been a progressive, you know, all my life, basically. So I think since I was 13 or something. And Stewart wrote this book called It Was All a Lie, and I kind of agree with him, and I just want to go back, because you were a Republican political operative your entire adult life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until now, this Trump. So the thing I'd like to talk about are like taxes, just the deficit.
Sure.
Okay. And so I guess that goes back to Reagan and supply side, and Reagan cut taxes and the growth. It was a Laffer curve, right? And the Laffer curve meant that if you cut taxes, you get more revenues because it would create more prosperity. The economy would take off and you'd get more revenues. And so it wouldn't create deficits. But of course, it did, right?
Yeah. Like that painful dawning of understanding. I'm not a stupid guy, but at one point I finally had to say, oh my God, this is all just bullshit. This is
when was that? What year would that be? That's what I want to know.
I can tell you. No, I can tell you on the economic stuff. And I was bitching about it publicly and privately to Republicans who were my clients and friends back then, that we were playing the crony capitalist game, and just calling it a tax cut doesn't make it something that is not a carved out benefit for one sector of society that no one else gets access to. And the idea that
can you give us a year on that?
2008. Late 2008, I started to talk to people, and we started to actually, our survey work started to include it, started to ask that question as a gauge of what we saw at the time was the dawning of the Tea Party movement.
Now, late 2008, we're just starting the worst recession, mm-hmm. the worst economic period since the Great Depression.
Right, and I was thinking to myself, well, we're not going to hold anybody in the banking industry to account. What the fuck is wrong with this country? Because these people built a product for which they should have been held criminally liable, which was the conservative response to a massive fraud.
You knew in 2008 that they weren't going to be prosecuting anybody from the banking industry?
It was inevitable. Because the people who came into the deal with Treasury, they would have immediately carved out any kind of you know, prosecution option. But it was obvious that a criminal fraud had been committed on the American people, and that these banks, you know. And look, as a conservative, I was outraged with, you know, these massive banks that were involved in a predatory foreclosure situation at that moment.
Yeah, that was the credit rating agencies giving AAA ratings to these bogus mortgage-backed securities that these banks were issuing, and if a credit rating agency, if Moody's or S&P gave a AAA to junk, then they'd get the next gig. So that was a crime. So anyway, that's one area of this. But you're saying that 2008 is the first time?
Actually, I will go back. I will wheel it back a little further now that I'm sort of introspective on this question. In 2004, the payday loan industry came to us, to our firm, and said, hey, we want you to do all this advertising for us and da-da-da-da. And I had no idea what payday loans
were.
I had no idea what they were, right? Oh, yeah. And I looked at it and I was like, I'm not touching this. This is poison. This is criminal. And maybe that was an early inflection point.
I'm basically saying, like, okay, so you were worked on the Bush campaign, right?
I did.
On W.
On 41.
On 41 as well.
And then for the RNC and for W, yeah.
So W, in his first debate with Gore, says, by far the vast majority of my tax cuts goes to those at the bottom. Now, not a majority of my tax cut goes to those at the bottom. Not even a vast majority of my tax cuts go to the bottom. But by far a vast majority. That was just a lie.
Well, sometimes you can tell an untruth without knowing it. I don't know how much of an economist W was. Campaigns on every side of the political divide talk a lot of shit.
But that's not what I'm asking you. I'm asking you as when did you go, you know what? Reagan tripled the national debt and it went up over 50% in HW's term, and he raised taxes and paid the price for that. Then Clinton comes in. He passes a tax increase that not one Republican in Congress votes for.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 94, he loses the House. And Gingrich becomes Speaker. And Rush Limbaugh, who just became, just got the Presidential Medal of Freedom, was named an honorary member of that class by Gingrich. And of course, Clinton handed off a surplus to Bush. So I'm saying, like, why did it take you till 2008 or four?
Listen, I've written about this, and part of it is there's a powerful cultural normative effect inside of any culture, and politics in the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and progressive Democrats and conservative Republicans, they're all parts of a culture. And the hardest thing in the world is to break out of your cultural norms and the cultural biases that you grew up with or that shaped you, especially early on.
I think that's very true.
And look, you're a cynical political consultant. So I elected liberal Republicans and I elected right-wing Republicans. And I elected moderate Republicans all over the country. But one of the things that I started to see in 2010 and 2012 was that the acceptable boundaries of Republicanism were narrowing. So I had come out and started advising clients in 2006 that I believed that gay marriage was A, going to be a social thing they couldn't stop, and B, it was wrong for them to try to stop it, because what role should the state, should government have in telling people they can't get married?
So this is post, this is 2006, you're saying?
Yeah, it's like six, yeah. And
yeah, and this is post 2004 for Bush, because in 2004, Bush and Rove pushed for a lot of amendments in states that were anti-LGBT marriage.
I'm going to say this. Rove carefully assessed what he wanted to achieve, what demographics he wanted to motivate, and he used those gay marriage initiatives in Florida and elsewhere to do that. He also knew that was something that older African American voters were not pro-gay marriage at the time. They were as anti-gay marriage as most Republican evangelicals. And so Rove had he saw that as a disruption opportunity. He wasn't wrong that it was a disruption opportunity. But, but as I said, in the post 2010, 2012 window, I started to see the narrowing of acceptable belief inside the Republican Party.
Tea Party. Yeah. The Tea Party had emerged.
Where you could not, the critique of the Democrats was, oh, they're all San Francisco liberals. They're all Boston liberals. They're all New York City liberals. Well, that was projection, because what the Tea Party was becoming and demanding was you all have to be a Fox News Alabama Republican. And so we started losing races in places like Washington State. We started losing races in places we should have won. And there was some pushback inside the GOP about that with the autopsy after 2012 and some other things. Then the next inflection point that I had, emotionally speaking, was watching what happened to Republicans who tried to pass an immigration reform bill. They got absolutely destroyed by this emergent outside cancer named Steve Bannon and Breitbart News and Fox, where they turned immigration from a fundamental underpinning of the American experience to dangerous caravans. And so, you know, I viewed that as something that absolutely indicated that there was a corrosion and that the GOP was moving from a party based, and as flawed as it may be, if you think about a right-leaning party that believes in individual liberty and free and open markets and free and fair trade and the propositional nature of America, that anyone can become an American. You can come here from Cambodia, and if you adopt the American system, you become an American and your kids are Americans. All that was being thrown away. And the populism that was rising and rising through 14 and 16 led us to the point where we're with Trump. And the idea that you had 16 Republicans in the field of varying degrees of competence and character, but a lot of whom in any other year would have been considered serious people, the fact that they were all blown out by Donald Trump. Even in 16, I was saying, this is the end of the party. You're done. It's over. You don't believe in anything. You believe in this guy. You don't believe in free markets or individual liberty or the Constitution or the rule of law or any of the things that Republicans used to scream. You know, when Barack Obama did an executive order, Republicans tore their fucking hair out. Oh my God, it's unconstitutional. It's dangerous. It's da da da. And now it's like, oh yeah, Trump wants to declare BLM a terrorist organization. Cool. We should do that. You know, it's astounding.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of things going on during all that. First of all, let's go back to same-sex marriage. Clinton was against that, and so was Obama.
I was in favor of it before Barack Obama was. So
yeah, me too. I started mm-hmm. running for the Senate in 2007. The first time I was asked about it, I said, no, I'm for it. I had one of my biggest LGBT supporters, the first fundraiser I had, came up to me and said, don't be for it. Don't be for same-sex marriage. You'll lose. And I went, no, I mean, I'm for it.
At that point in your state, it was still a tough call to do that, right?
It wasn't impossible. So, right. I'd never not been for it. Right. You know, I mean, and I thought, like, if I'm going to start hedging my opinions now on stuff like that, I'm not going to, you know, what am I doing? And, but no, the day I did it, there was just deep concern that I was going to lose because of that. And I said, I just don't think so. And Jesse Ventura,
mm-hmm.
Was for that.
Yep.
And you know, when you're talking about Jesse Ventura, that's part of the reason I think Trump, that was his appeal.
Sure.
And also those other 16, part of the problem was there are 15 of them.
Yep.
And also the problem was any of them who were viable wanted to be the last guy standing, believing that Trump could never get
Correct.
The nomination.
Absolutely.
And then by the time they figured out, oh, geez, he is going to get the nomination, it was over. And so it was amazing to watch that thing. But basically, how could you not watch him? And CNN he's doing a rally. Let's stay on the rally.
Absolutely. I wrote about this one time. I had a person from another campaign call me and say, I can't believe CNN. We had this whole huge event set up. They were going to cover it. And we worked for weeks with them to get it together. And they're just showing Trump's goddamn plane circling the airfield. Yep. That's television for you.
Plane is circling. That means that within the next half hour, 45 minutes, Donald Trump will be talking about Mexico paying for the wall. And he'll improvise something really weird that you're going to laugh at. So stay tuned. We're going to go now to a Humira ad and come right back. Yeah, it was impossible. I was campaigning for Hillary during that time. She told me that she watched them because they're entertaining.
I believe it. Of course. I mean, you know, one of the things about Trump is you have to admit that he recognized that reality television has become the thing that is the definition.
I wonder why he realized that.
Right. Yeah, right. But it's become the definitional characteristic of what America is. You know, look, every year there are 700 plus reality TV shows in production in this country. He recognized there was nothing ideological going on here in this country anymore. It was all entertainment and attention and all those things. And so, you know, here we are with the 16 or the 15 others, you know, trying to talk about policy. Come on, get the hell out of here.
When all these shows stop being scripted shows, and I'm a writer, right? Mm-hmm. It just is so sad. I haven't said this a few weeks ago. My agent calls me and says, you have an offer. And he emails me, you got an offer. It's interesting. We'll see. I don't know if you'll take it. You'll see what it is. It was Masked Singer.
Oh, good God.
Oh, good God is right. So I had never seen the show, but I'd seen promos for it.
Right.
Watching football. So I went like, wow, that looks terrible. These are people in kind of costumes that look like mm-hmm. they're designed by Japanese variety show people. And it looks awful, awful what I can tell. So then I view it. And it was worse than I could possibly imagine, except people singing behind a mask is interesting because you listen to the song differently. So I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not knocking it, but it was not for me. This is my Sean Spicer moment, if I choose to have one, which I don't. And so
you're not going to wear a buoyantly overdone flamenco shirt?
Well, that was dancing. This would have been a mask. I would have been dressed as a flamingo.
Oh, good God.
Anyway, or something like that. So this is the only thing I could think of to do, is that they have a number of singers, and you go against another one, and whoever loses has to unmask himself or herself. Mm-hmm. So my idea was, when I unmasked myself, was to go, you people ought to be ashamed of yourself. This show is a disgrace. This is why Americans are the most underinformed, over-entertained people in the world. I thought that would be funny, but getting there, I'd have to wear this ridiculous costume, right. And I have been on Masked Singer, but I was trying to figure out if there's any way to do it with dignity. And that was the closest I came to figure it out.
As Donald Trump proves, reality TV and dignity do not go hand in hand.
Now, let's go back to this. So when, for example, on healthcare, okay, mm-hmm. when Obama was trying to do what was called Obamacare or the ACA, where were you on that? Where were you? Were you a consultant still, a Republican consultant?
Still a consultant, still a Republican. I fought against it for some of my corporate clients.
And you agree now that it was a good thing, right?
I was fighting for the side of crony capitalism in that. And you reach a point where you're like,
well, that's the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, it has become that. Yeah. And you reach a point where you're like, hey, wow, you know, hospitals and insurance companies, they're not just in this to provide innovative healthcare services for all Americans. They're in this to maximize their quarterlies so that their bonus structure is retained for their leadership.
You know, what we're mainly trying to do is get as many people insured, get health insurance yeah. as possible, and find a way to do it. Mm-hmm. And there were compromises made with
pharma insurance. Pharma. Yeah.
Yeah. And in order to get it done. But what got done was millions of more people had health insurance.
Yep.
And also could afford it. And that's why millions could do it.
And the irony of the whole thing is, when Obamacare became a legislative live issue, one of our clients asked us to do focus groups. We did them all over the country. And we asked a very clear question. We said, what's the one thing that would make you support this? And we discovered that everyone, and I mean liberal, conservative, moderate, Republican, Democrat, independent, black, white, thin, you know, everybody in the country, old, young, pre-existing conditions, was the killer app. of Obamacare. Yep. And at the time, I remember writing in the report, I said, if this becomes the discussion point of this campaign on Obamacare, it's over. If Americans ever figure out the pre-existing condition stuff is in this, it's done. You guys are done.
No, they weren't done until 2018.
Yeah.
That's the year that pre-existing conditions became the issue.
Yeah.
And that's the year Republicans got clobbered.
Yep.
I don't understand why we didn't do better in the down races this year, except I wanted to ask you about that,
yeah.
Which is socialism. That word, you know, I don't know why Democrats didn't go, do you like Medicare? Do you like Social Security? Those are socialists. Those are socialist things. We are not going to take over our steel factories and the means of production. I mean, we are.
Right.
What do you think we're talking? You know, this is just, do you like healthcare?
That would have been a very smart way to go. And I said this at the time. I've written a lot about the brand of socialism. And, you know, Americans are fine with socialism as long as it's not called that. They are fine with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, all these other things. They're fine with that.
Social Security comes close.
Yeah. They're fine with all that. But here's where the campaign should have paid a little more attention to the cultural nature of it. I don't care how many generations removed you are from Castro, if you're a Cuban in Florida, there is still a draw to that message. So Joe Biden should have gone to Miami, okay? Wouldn't have cost him a damn thing. Should have gone to Miami, stood in the Cali Ocho and said, Fidel Castro was a goddamn monster who should burn in hell forever. You know what? He gets a little pissy response from a couple people, but the Cubans hear that and they go, okay, now we can talk about other things. Because they're actually much more moderate on a bunch of other issues. It's that thing. It's like my grandmother used to say, there's a turd in the punch bowl. It means it's not punch anymore. and so, you know,
she was smart.
She was a smart lady. You know, there is a degree to which trying to reconcile the word socialism. And I look, we saw this in focus groups this year, and we saw it popping out in polling all year. Defund the police was a lie, mm-hmm. but it was an effective lie. Socialism was a lie, but it was an effective lie. And I mean, Biden actually came out pretty early and said, no, I'm not going to defund the police.
But wasn't that our fault? Didn't we not say that enough? And didn't we not explain that Social Security is a form of socialism? And but let me ask you something about Miami, though. Maria Teresa Kumar, who's been a guest a number of times, said that, and this is something I want to ask you about, which is disinformation.
Oh, she huge, said, huge.
She said that she heard from her family in Colombia, that's mm-hmm. where Maria Teresa is mm-hmm. from, that there was disinformation being spread in Miami. So this is Spanish-speaking people in Colombia were hearing this and warning Maria Teresa. And this is, you've seen it in Georgia.
Absolutely.
Just see it everywhere. And to me, this is the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems anyway, that we're facing in America, which is we have two universes of information.
Absolutely.
What the hell can we do about this right-wing disinformation?
Well, you know, look, there are three cancers in our society in the information world. Fox, Facebook, and fascism. And the last one I'm being flippant about, but there's a whole right-wing infrastructure basically now devoted to be like Breitbart or Gateway Pundit, where they feed into this alternative reality bubble. And it is a really tough problem to solve in this country. As long as Facebook provides rocket fuel for the most crazy conspiracy theories under the sun. You know, Facebook is why millions of Americans believe there was a child predator sex ring under a pizza restaurant in DC. Facebook is why that happened. And Facebook is why people believe Dominion voting machines stole the election from Donald Trump. All these things are not inexplicable. They're very explicable. And Facebook is the main reason why we're facing these problems.
Carl Rove's group, Crossroads, ran these ads on Facebook, which is Warnock was commenting on Reverend Wright saying, God damn America. And so he was quoting him critically.
Correct.
And so they run an ad of him saying that as if he was saying that, and as if he said it, and they were saying he said it, and said he believed essentially what Reverend Wright believes. Facebook took it down, but then Crossroads put it right back up, and Facebook didn't take it down.
Correct.
So this is when you point at Facebook, they have an enforcement mechanism for this, and those people did nothing at a certain point. And it's really, really pernicious. I mean, it is the most pernicious thing going on now and poisoning our politics.
100%. And it is something that.
Why did you do it, Rick? No, I was just being. You didn't do it.
I'm running for the hills.
All righty. We're talking to Rick Wilson of the Lincoln Project, and we'll be right back after this word from somebody.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What are real regrets that you have in your career?
Real regrets? Well, you know...
Is that a nasty question?
No, not at all. No, I have a few. One of the things that you know, I say to people, I'm not going to go back and recapitulate every race I ever did or every campaign I ever ran or every ad I ever made. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to go back and like beat my chest on it. I do regret that I wasn't able to, sooner than I did, try to turn the ship. I do regret that a lot of the campaigns that we ran, the people we helped, turned out to be scumbag chicken shits. And that I do regret.
Names?
Oh, come on. You see.
Well, I don't know which campaigns you ran.
What? There's one guy in the Senate who's been willing to stand up to Donald Trump, and it's Mitt Romney. Mm-hmm. One guy. You know, Ben Sasse issues the occasional elliptical, I'm so disappointed. You know, Susan Collins furrows her brow. You know, Rob Portman pretends he's part of the wallpaper. Marco Rubio tweets elliptical Bible verses. Come on. I didn't join a party full of like passive aggressive snakes. I thought this was a party that
believed in
leadership. Oh, well, yeah. I thought it was a party that believed in leadership. And look, and you call me sentimental all you want, but the fact that the like George Herbert Walker Bush as a president, and I was a junior guy in the administration, he led that administration with a lot of honor. And one of the things that I saw then, you know, when David Duke ran for governor of Louisiana, you know what that, you know what George Herbert Walker Bush did? He sent a bunch of assholes like me down to Louisiana to help the Democrat. And we did. Vote for the crook. It's important, was the campaign.
Was that Edwards?
Yes. It was Edwards. Yeah. Evan Edwards. And I regret not being able to turn, like I said, to turn the ship and to influence more people. I regret not calling out the entertainment culture of Republican politics that was emergent as things like CPAC went from being a conference of ideas to a place to hook up to a clown fest of the conspiracy right.
Did you ever do Rush's show?
Were you I was never on Rush's that? Show. Rush lost his shit with me on his show a couple times. One time of which was about gay marriage, and he dislikes me rather intensely. So, you know, It is what it is.
I'm just curious. What did he say about?
He said it was like, oh, Wilson's part of the elite trying to break our cultural norms and force gay marriage.
Yeah. I remember that stuff would be like, why shouldn't a man marry a dog then?
Right.
He would do that. Yeah. That stuff. Yeah.
You know, and part of that, I've compressed it all into one joke, which is, you know, they guys like Rush and people like Breitbart are like, you know, if we don't stop them now, it's going to be gay Sharia marriage for everybody. Their portfolio of paranoias is amazing.
So, look, we live in a country where we have the widest disparities in wealth and income.
Yeah.
We have what's going on in this country now during the pandemic is a disgrace, and not just because of the dropping the ball, which is the most horrific thing that Trump did, but also just look at what it's like for kids in neighborhoods in Washington, D.C. It is a horror show. And we have people, we've tripled food insecurity. We don't take care of people in this country. And it is Republicans who are always, you said at the beginning of all of this, that they, on the side of the, what'd you call them? Corporate capitalism.
Crony capitalism. Yeah. No, look, I promise you the vast majority of Republican elected officials will talk a great game about the middle class and the ones that are these new populists will talk a great game about the working man. And when the lobbyist from Citibank walks in the door, that's it. Game's over. And when you've got a guy like McConnell, who you know, he's a transactional politician who believes in the retention of his own power above all else.
He's the worst. Yeah. He's the absolute worst. And I don't think we would have gotten this package if it hadn't been for Georgia. Am I right?
Correct. Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay. So think about that. Think about that. I mean, how do you let people go hungry? How do you do this? How do you let people go to, you know, schools that are underfunded?
They don't matter to them.
But that's your guys, just got to say. The guys that you were working with for a long time.
But look,
I'm just trying to ask you to square that in a way that will make me happy.
Right. Adjust your ideological priors. My pleasure. No, look, Al, I mean, I'm not making any excuses for the fact that, as you know, Stuart said, it was all a lie. We did this thing that we thought mattered to improve the lives of people, and it turns out it was all bullshit. It turns out that that a lobbyist from pharma walks in the door, or the lobbyist or a lobbyist from the realtors walks in the door, or anybody else, frankly.
Democrats meet with them too.
You do, and you do. And look, Democrats have their own set of
hypocrisies,
right?
And you know, there's a difference between meeting with them and voting with them too. You can, you know, but it's a very interesting thing, and I've written about this, which is if Minnesota is huge medical device,
sure.
We have Medtronic, yeah. And it's not about Medtronic executives getting rich. It's about all the people that work for Medtronic, right? It's about jobs in your state. And look, I went to Israel early in my first term, and I'd been before, but I went to the Knesset, and I realized that everyone in the Knesset represents their party, but all of Israel. Mm-hmm. We represent our state. There's only two of us from our state. So when Minnesota's interests are at stake, I'm voting for Minnesota's interests. And sometimes that may be, okay, let's cut the medical device tax, because that'll be better for jobs in my state.
Yeah, I mean, look, taxes are not a universal good, and neither are tax cuts.
Rush Limbaugh, when I first listened to him, said, if you taxed at 100%, no one would work. And I said, you know what? He's right. It's the tax rate, the marginal tax rate should be somewhere between 0 and 100%, but not either of them. unless you're not making any money, or, you know.
One of the problems we have now is we talk about a tax cut, but what bothers me more in some ways is that corporations get enormous regulatory carve-outs, enormous tax benefit carve-outs that are wired into the things that we don't see, you know, in the headlines. Yep. And you've seen that up close, Al. You've seen how grisly that shit gets. And, you know, I had a person who a friend of mine who was writing the Trump tax cut. He's one of those guys lurking in McConnell's office. Okay. And I texted him at the time. I said, dude, is there anything in here for like middle-class uplift? What's going on? He's like, the fuck do I care? I work for the hedge fund industry. Who cares? And that's something people really need to understand, is that's how this shit works.
But there is a difference in the parties.
Oh, of course. I'm not disputing that.
And you're in the wrong one. That's all I'm saying.
I'm a man without a country now.
Yeah. So what do you do going forward? Are the Lincoln Project lives? It continues on.
The Lincoln Project
on,
continues
right?
on. We've got work to do in 2022 and 2024. We accomplished something really amazing, and we're part of a big movement, and we helped remove Donald Trump from the presidency.
Did you think you convinced anyone, or do you think that you just
rattled
him?
Well, we know we rattled him, and that's part of the thing that people don't understand about the Lincoln Project. We worked on three or four different axes of attack. One of them was mess with Donald Trump, get in his head, bother him, distract him. We had spies in the campaign, and we had people in the White House that were telling us, oh my God, you just sent him around the bend with this ad yesterday. You know, everybody's freaking out about X or Y that you're doing. And so we did that to strategically disrupt the Trump campaign. We made him fire his campaign manager. We made him change message. We kept him distracted. And a lot of the stuff we were doing that was the really hot distraction, that was because Joe Biden has just come out of this bruising primary with no money in the bank, exhausted. The campaign had nothing put together yet. So we were buying them time and space to organize and raise money and to not have to go into the apocalyptic battle with Donald Trump the day after he gets the primary wrapped up. So that element of our campaign, it's what we call the iceberg. Above the water, you see all the flashy viral video ads hammering Donald Trump. You see us causing all kinds of disruption and trouble. Below the water, we have a massive voter contact effort in 16 states. We have a massive political organization, specifically in 9 states. We do all sorts of voter contact, voter outreach. The ads people weren't seeing on Twitter and Facebook and in the news were running out in the states, pushing people away from Trump. We wanted our voter contact work out in the states, and the advertising we were doing on cable, on broadcast, and in digital out in the states to move certain very narrow crafted audience segments. We knew who we were after in places like suburban Atlanta. We knew who we were after in Oakland and Macomb counties in Michigan. We knew where we were going to go in Arizona, in Maricopa County, exactly who to talk to. And so all those people that we targeted, you know, we identified them early. We did a big data operation very early, and we were able to push, we thought, a very significant number of former Republican and independent-leaning voters over to Joe Biden. Now, we could not push everyone in the Republican Party, and we didn't try. The hard Trump voters were immovable. We studied them like anthropologists. We knew them, and we knew they were not going to go. We knew they were not going to change position. And so, you know, here we are. We picked a narrow segment. We targeted it. We moved it.
So going forward, you're saying you're going to do 22. That means congressional races. That may mean state legislative races, governor's races. Are you essentially going to be backing Democrats?
We have a phrase with Republicans and Trump. You bought the ticket, you take the ride. A lot of people are still on track to take the ride in the next election cycle.
Rick, thank you so much. A pleasure talking with you.
Thank you for having me, Al. I appreciate it. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening. That beautiful music is by Leo Kottke, the great Leo Kottke. I want to thank Peter Ogburn for producing this podcast. We'll talk again next week. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Al Franken podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure, and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.